Hey there, parents. We've got something incredible to share with you. Have you heard about Adapted Design? They're making a real difference for families with disabled children.
Absolutely. They're all about empowering you to adapt toys and products for your child's unique needs.
And here's the game changer. Their how-to book, Let's Adapt for Everyone. It's a guide to DIY adaptations, helping you save big on those expensive adapted products that oftentimes break the bank.
Imagine the joy of customizing toys just for your kids. Visit adapted-design.com and let's make every playtime extraordinary.
That's adapted-design.com because every child deserves a world of possibilities.
You're listening to the Bitching and Bolusing podcast with Courtney and Brittany. Hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning into the Bitching and Bolusing podcast. I'm Brittany.
And I'm Courtney. Today, we're going to be bitching about a controversial issue. I mean, it's kind of like our forte at this point. But there's always a lot of discussions going on online about internalized ableism, and there's a lot of aspects about internalized ableism that a lot of parents are really against even talking about, like the acknowledging that these things exist. And today we want to focus on how internalized ableism affects how us as parents will essentially influence our children in how they interact with society and how they perceive society. So let's get to some bitching about this right now, because I gotta tell you, it's something that I think from the moment I had Lino, it's always been on my mind how what I say or what I do to Lino, how that affects Lino in the sense of how he sees himself in society, if that makes sense. I know that's kind of vague, but I think back on my experience with disability, especially in society, like outside of my own personal experience having my uncle disabled, which I've mentioned before, has been a very strange topic to me to begin with, because the way my family viewed my uncle's disability was more or less, well, we don't see it sort of thing. But that experience didn't necessarily fully carry over to my experience with, like, let's say, disabled children in school as I was growing up, things like that. And it's always been something that I've seen disabled kids in my life as, like, the stereotypical image of a disabled child. And what I mean by that is, like, oh, well, it's the happy, positive, pleasant disabled child. Or, oh, it's he's just so... Or he or she is so inspirational.
And,
yeah.
And then you know, the pity, like this, right? Like, oh.
Yes. But it, you know, and it's funny because obviously I didn't have the foresight to think about that in the moment growing up, you know, but now in hindsight, I'm like, oh, like, oh, shit. You know, like way back when was like, I was feeding into that whole thing as well. You know, that was just how it was seen. You know, we would have, I think about growing up in like junior high school and stuff, where the special education classes would mix with the general population in the like extracurricular classes.
Yeah.
So like music, gym. Yeah, art, exactly. Yeah. You know? Yeah. And but there was always like this pretense of like, okay, well, everybody be nice. And here's the disabled children that are going to join you today. Yeah. And, you know, there was just always this like
segregation.
Yeah, but this like also this vibe of like, well, this is how you treat them, and you know, like be kind, and
it's very like like holding a baby for the first time when you're younger.
Almost
you know
like
what
you're
I mean?
Giving instructions, like, you're kind of being gentle. Hold the head up, you know.
Yeah,
you know, like that's kind of what it felt like, and obviously, you know, you grow up and. I, at the time, let's say I'm in junior high, I'm like 11, 12, 13 years old max. I don't know any better. Yeah. It's not like I'm going into it, especially from the perspective, it's not like my parents taught anything different in terms of how to interact with disabled children. So it's not like I knew any better. It was just like, oh, okay, so this is how you interact, mm-hmm. you know? And I went my whole life like that until having Lino, mm-hmm. because that completely uprooted that perspective of like, well, I don't want him to just be like this, the kid who's disabled and everyone's like, I gotta be nice to you, yeah. because you're like, no, I just want you to treat him like a person.
Yeah. I think there's still very much, I think back then, even more, there was very much like a non-disabled led narrative around disability. I think that still very much exists. Thankfully, like, I, you know, we talk about social media a lot and like our love-hate relationship with it. Mm-hmm. And like, I will say, like, hate social media, love social media for the fact that it is giving a platform to like disabled adults and disabled individuals, yeah. to turn the narrative more to like disabled led narrative, which it should be. But I still think like it's very much so non-disabled led narrative, yeah. around disability. And like, that's extremely problematic because when you are younger, like you said, like in junior high and stuff like you're just mimicking what you see. And yeah. if you have this narrative told to you coming from a non-disabled perspective, you're going to mimic that. Same with me. I never had exposure to disability growing up. Like, it was the same thing where the classes were segregated. I mean, I think, like, the only exposure I ever really had was the disabled kids would, like, deliver attendance every now and then. I remember, I think this was maybe my junior year of high school, the disabled kids would always deliver attendance every day to... I don't know if it was like, whenever. I don't even remember when attendance was delivered, but regardless. And I remember one of the girls like delivered attendance and there was this kid who sat next to me and he just started going off, making fun of her. And I remember I like flipped the fuck out on this kid. I was like so pissed off. When you meet bullying like that, disability is not a choice. Right? And like, yeah. I always think about this and I'm like, you don't get to choose to be disabled. It's very similar of like how you look. You don't get to choose, you know, how you're born, how you look. I remember like girls would always get, you know, bullied if they started their period. They were like, yeah. We don't get to choose that. We don't get to choose to like menstruate. You know what I mean?
No. And if I did, I would say no.
Yes, exactly. And so like, I remember I flipped out and like, I actually had to get sent to the principal's office and I was like, I didn't do anything wrong. But like,
yeah.
And so, you know, I think that it's so problematic because especially back then we were mirroring that non-disabled narrative around disability. I think we're all now parents. Like, yeah. like I think that we're now, you know, we're bringing that forward. And the ones that yeah. have disabled kids, that was ingrained in us. And so now yep. we're starting to see a terrible problem of a parent-centered narrative around disability.
Yeah,
that's problematic.
And 100%. And how that sort of mindset, how that influences these kids, mm-hmm. and how it just perpetuates it. Mm-hmm. Right. Because if you even think about what we're saying, how our experiences growing up with other disabled kids in like our school years, that also does fall on our parents, mm-hmm. right? It's not like what we were getting at home was a different type of exposure or education regarding disability than it was in school or in society. It was exactly the same. But we all, I think, and I hope at this point, all parents can agree that what is happening in the home has a huge effect on what your kids do out in society.
That's the trickle-down effect then of how society perceives disability. Because when you're yeah. instilling these societal, quote-unquote, norms of disability, your child's now taking that in, they're becoming that. They're becoming yeah. what you're instilling in them. And now society is seeing them as the societal norm that they've always seen. And it's like yeah. a self-fulfilling prophecy, right?
Exactly. Like, it's proving the stereotype, yeah. right? It's like, oh, well, yeah, of course, huh? Like, that's the stereotype. So it looks like it's proving the stereotype. And it also, I think there's also this element that has always been such a dagger in my side, because the only thing I ever want to do is empower Lino and Luca, for that matter, because I think in a lot of ways this shouldn't be specific to just disabled children, mm-hmm. but I want to empower them to advocate mm-hmm. for themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think a lot of that, if you as a parent are catering to that societal narrative, that stereotype of disability, you could be silencing your child to advocate for themselves, mm-hmm. right? So, like, if you think about it from this perspective, a very simplistic example, if your child doesn't know, let's say there's something in school that is blocking them from participating, if they don't learn from their own parents and their own family what it should look like for them, how are they even going to speak up and say something mm-hmm. about what is segregating them mm-hmm. or having them not be included in something?
Mm-hmm. And I think that it also really needs to be said that these kids also need to feel comfortable and confident to self-advocate within family. And I know that yeah. we're talking about this, and I know that there is going to be parents that are going to sit back, because there always yeah. are. And they're gonna say, well, my child can't advocate for themselves. My child can't speak for themselves. Your child can fucking self-advocate. It just all depends on whether people are listening or not. There is body yes. language, right? Like,
yes. I was gonna say, yes. Lino self-advocates all the exactly. time. He will complain until the very bitter yes. end when he is not happy about something. And, you know, that is totally, yeah. absolutely true. Mm-hmm.
Like, even if your child can't cry or what, like, their body tensing up, that's self-advocacy, right? Their body mm-hmm. relaxing, that means that's a different form of self-advocacy. And so you got to sit there, and if you're saying, well, no, my child can't speak, so they can't self-advocate, well, then you're completely dismissing every single other form of communication, because communication is yep. not just speaking, it's not just sign language. There are so many forms of communication, and one of those forms is body language, right? And, like,
yeah.
that was Cyrus's first form of communication, was, oh, you know, he's uncomfortable, he's tight, he doesn't like this position, he's, you know.
Yeah.
You know, that's really important, too. And I think that along the lines of self-advocating, we really have to also encourage our children to feel comfortable self-advocating within the family.
Yeah.
Within the parents, the siblings, the aunts, the uncles, the grandparents, all of this. When we talk about advocacy, one thing that I hear a lot within the disabled community is that some people were encouraged to advocate, but felt like they could not advocate within the family. And so they couldn't be as open about certain things. They couldn't discuss certain things. And that's tough. That's so tough yeah. because a lot of these kids and they're faced with a lot of grief from other family members.
Yeah.
Courtney, you and I, we've experienced it with...
Oh,
with,
God, yeah.
Right? With, like, grandparents, you know.
Yes. Like, I love you, family.
Yeah,
but like
perpetuating
yeah.
that grief onto our children simply because they're disabled. And that's something that I've really been trying to work with Cyrus on. I think it's okay to say, you don't like this. It's okay. You can say you don't like this, or you can,
yeah.
you know, and to teach the other people too, like, hey, listen, he's extending a lot. This is not yeah. okay.
Like yeah.
the way
like that's
he's extending,
cues.
Like he doesn't yes. like this. Let's take a step back.
I think there's, it's, you know, we always get flack for this, but we, some may say we're holier than thou.
We're just mom-shaming you guys.
We just always get flack for this sort of thing. But it really is hard to acknowledge our role in all of this. Mm-hmm. And I fucking get that. Mm-hmm. I am not, like, I know nobody really wants to think that when we say this that we're actually genuine about it. But we're not trying to say we haven't had problems with it. We're not trying to say we also didn't do the same things you're likely doing.
I mean, I still fucking do the same things. That's the thing.
I still catch myself.
I'm like,
dude,
oh,
there's
my
so
God.
Many times and I'm like, did I just say that?
Yeah, all the time.
Like, did I just say that in front of Lino? Did I just say that to Lino? Mm-hmm. And I have to backtrack it, and I literally explain the whole thing to him. And I'm sure there's so much of what I'm explaining mm-hmm. that no 5-year-old is ever going to understand, but I still have to do it for my own, like, I've got to pull this back. I've got to explain this. I've got to accept that what I said could be interpreted a completely different way and can be perpetuating so many stigmas. Mm-hmm. I do that still mm-hmm. to this day. And I have to tell you, I am not exactly hopeful that I won't ever do it again.
Well,
I think it's so internalized, right?
Like, our brain. The wiring of our brain.
Exactly. And that's kind of the whole thing with internalized ableism is it's not like you could just be like, oh, I see that these actions I take and these words I say are ableist. Let me never do it again. Yeah. The whole point of acknowledging and recognizing internalized ableism is to acknowledge and recognize that these are inherent mm-hmm. because of how society is, mm-hmm. because of how ableism is literally what the majority of our society is based on. Everything. This is what I'm talking about. Laws. I'm talking about like everything is based off of ableism.
Mm-hmm. And I think that it's so important for parents especially to listen. Because the thing is that like this is not the first time Courtney and I are having this conversation. Like
nope.
And
it won't be the last either.
But my God, the amount of times that we get told like you're mom shaming or like you're not supporting the parenting community. There's such this level of almost like I don't have to listen. I'm untouchable because I'm a parent. And that is such a terrible negative mindset. And we're not saying that, you know, you all aren't doing your best. We know, because we are too.
No, yeah, 100%.
But to sit back and say, like, these topics shouldn't be discussed solely because it's in regards to the parents, or, like, we don't have to listen to disabled voices because we're parents and nobody knows our kids' disability better than us. Yeah. Like, I can guarantee that somebody who's got spastic quad CP knows my son's disability a little bit better than me.
100%. Like, as much as I know my son better than anybody else, there are definitely, there's definitely going to be disabled individuals out there that know him better.
Yes, from that perspective, they're going to know his struggles better. They're going to know the way that his body feels better because they've experienced it. Like, they're going to know the physical, you know, results of getting Botox or getting this or getting that. Like, I'm never going to know that. I'm just sitting here making the decisions. And so I think when parents are sitting there and they're so fucking resistant to listening, and instead of actually, like, hearing what is being said, part of their brain instantly turns off and dismisses the whole thing as, like, mom shaming or perpetuating guilt onto parents and this and that. Like, you're doing such an injustice to your child and to yourself and to the disabled community. And I really would love to know where that, like, divide is happening, because we even had a commenter that said, like, you could be doing the fucking most for the disabled community, right? Like, you could be fundraising, you could be doing this, you could be trying to pass bills, and you can still have that internalized ableism.
Yes.
And it's really, and it's,
Finding a person that does it.
And that's the thing, like, we do too, like, we're sitting here and we're trying to, like, we're trying to do all of this advocacy stuff, and there are times I'm like, ah, fuck.
Oh my God. Hard, like, bad. Yeah. No, like, it's so true.
It's so true. And
it's that instant defensiveness.
Yes.
That I'm not sure.
Why?
Or I'm not 100%, I'm not 100% positive what, like, the root causes of that. The only thing I could think is that it's almost rooted itself in internalized ableism. And then this also, I guess it is also partly like a societal thing where it's just, I feel like it's just hard to accept that sort of criticism.
Yeah, but I mean, it's also like we can't sit here in this narcissistic mindset of being like, 100%. I don't have to change.
We also can't be coddled.
No,
meaning
we can't.
Like, you're a grown adult. You're a parent, mm-hmm. right? You've chosen to take on children, whether that is you have them naturally or you foster, adopt, whatever the case is. Like, these are adult choices you make, right? So, like, if you can't accept the fact that all of us as parents are on some level not the best parents, just in the sense that, like, we're not given a fucking handbook about this shit. Nobody knows what the fuck
it's
they're
all
doing.
About growth,
we're all
baby.
Flying by the seat of our pants right now. Yep. Every single parent on this planet. If anybody ever tells you different, they are flat out lying to you. Nobody knows what the fuck they're doing, right? And then you throw in a controversial issue, which shouldn't be, but it is, of disability into your life because in society, again, ableism, disability is a stigma, worst case scenario, all of these things. You throw this wrench in there. And yes, unfortunately, you're going to have some really uncomfortable realization.
And I think that it's important for people to also sit back, parents, non-disabled parents, and even disabled parents, to sit back and realize that there are a lot of disabled individuals who will flat out say, I have internalized ableism.
Of
so
course.
You're not
how
like,
can they not? So like how could they not?
And so parents, you're not just like immune to, you know, ableism just because you have a disabled kid. Like people who are living with disabilities also have it. And so it's like the resistance to acknowledge it, the resistance to see it, the resistance to want to change or make an effort or say like, hey, yeah, I could maybe be doing this differently. You are now creating that self-fulfilling prophecy of having your child become what society sees them or sees what disability is.
We're feeding it. We're feeding it, man. We're just that vicious cycle.
If you don't
do that self-reflection, people need to realize our posts are not personal attacks.
No, and even
they are
this.
Meant. They are put out there for self-reflection.
And it's the same with the podcast. Like we're not sitting here like point. I don't know who the fuck's listening
to us. I don't know who
us.
You are. Okay, so when you're like, you're just coming at us, and like you're like. I do this. How dare you say I shouldn't? And I'm like, what the fuck
I
are you saying?
I don't know what your name is.
I don't even know who you are. Never mind that I'm telling you, you shouldn't do what you're doing. Like, it blows my mind. It really blows my mind. And I wish we had, like, a special little, like, wand that we can, like... stop some parents just for a second just to have a little thought and just like 5 minutes just sit aside take
cool
this
down
thought and think about it
yes
because holy shit like we are talking about such a bigger picture than what we mostly are attacked for.
And I mean, and this is okay, and here's my problem. So Courtney's referencing our post that we made about how parents can be ableist, and we were essentially called out saying like we're doing a disservice to the parenting community because the parenting community, you know, they're just trying their best and this and that. And I really have to sit back and I have to ask parents whether you think you're ableist or not is that's besides the point. But have you met an ableist parent? Chances are, unless you're just turning a blind eye to it, your answer's going to be yes. And I really have to ask, like, where is this mentality within the parenting community that we are so defensive of each other that we can't actually see the problems that are occurring to the child and the disabled community? Like, we are so up each other's asses that we can't even sit back and be like, you know what, this is probably an issue that we should discuss.
It's easier, Britt. It's easier to find a group of people that agree with your mindset than to do the self-reflection and the work and to acknowledge and accept that we are at fault. It's just easier. And the thing is that because it's easier, we're in the minority.
I totally understand. And like, I don't want to downplay this because I think that we've both been in this situation. But like, I get that we are all fucking in survival mode. And we are when we're in survival mode all the time, it's so hard to really make genuine connections, right? So like, we do turn to the parenting community for advice, for help, for making that genuine connection, and for also pats on the back. Like, I don't care what anyone says. Like, if you're sitting there being like, I don't know if I should get my kid this major surgery, or I don't know if this was the right decision, you're gonna want people to be like, you did the best that you could, you did a good job, you know? But like, the thing is that it's treated as though it can't coexist, right? It's treated as though you either have to beat up each other's asses all the time and you can't say anything, Or you then say something and then you're not supporting the parenting
then
community.
We're blacklisted.
Yeah, and like, and I don't understand why, like, where they just can't coexist. I genuinely don't know. I have no idea. Really, I don't know.
It's just our moral superiority. I mean, like.
But really, like, I don't understand why it can't coexist. And so now we have, and this is why, you know, it's a little hypocritical for Courtney and I, because we're sitting here this entire episode and we're saying, like, you know, listen to disabled narratives, like, listen to disabled voices. Like, that's what's important if you're getting your viewpoint of disability from non-disabled narratives. Like, we are both not disabled, right? I mean, like, we are speaking from a non-disabled narrative. But I understand the hypocrisy of that. But there's also this side where we're telling you all the time, like, listen to disabled voices. Like, follow disabled accounts. Speak to disabled adults. Listen. Because just because you work with disabled individuals or you have a disabled child, I know some fucking, you know, I hate the term, but special ed teachers, aides. I know some therapists that, oh my God, some of these people are the worst when it comes to ableism. I'm telling you right now. And a lot of it is because they genuinely are like, I have been doing this my whole life. I studied this. Like, I know all about disability. And they just will not listen. And so I think that that's why we're sitting here saying, like, listen to disabled voices. I understand the hypocrisy of us sitting here trying to teach, but we are also coming from that parenting perspective that listens to disabled voices.
We're trying to we're trying to bridge that gap. And I think it's also important that we teach our children to listen to disabled voices. Obviously, especially our own disabled children, to reach out and speak to other disabled individuals, but also if you have non-disabled children. I think it's really important to foster that into our parenting. We need to push that, because that's how, this is the whole point of, hey, listen, if you just joined us, let me tell you the whole point of me and Brittany doing all of this. The whole point is we would love to one day be like, oh my God, we were part of a change. Mm-hmm. Because really the whole goal of all of this is to make change in the world and how the world perceives disability and how disabled individuals are allowed to live in society. Like, it's literally all we're trying to do. Unfortunately, if you feel shamed and all this and that, whatever, that might happen along the way. But that is literally the fucking point.
Yeah.
So when we're sitting here and we're talking about this and we're trying to break things down, I will never sit there and tell you, you need to do this X, Y, and Z with your child. This is how you should parent your child. But I will absolutely, without a doubt, I will sit here and I will present an argument for you of why you should potentially, if not definitely, change your mindset on something, because it will ultimately have a domino effect in the future for your children and society. Mm-hmm. Okay, because it's going to spread outward, right? As you teach and they learn and they start teaching, it all spreads outward. It starts very, very smallly in your own family at first, right? Which is what Brittany was saying, like, advocate, self-advocacy within the family. It starts with your own family. You may lose people in the process, so be it, but it starts in your own family, and then it starts to spread outward as they go into society, whether they go into school, whether they go into day camps, summer camps, whatever the case is, like, it starts to spread outward. Yeah. And that's the whole point, right? Because you can't have change with just two moms sitting in their bedrooms. Like, that's we have to spread it, right? We can't just be here, and me and Brittany can't just be like patting each other on the back that we're like, yeah, I agree with you, bro. Like, good point. Like, no, which is why we're on this podcast telling you guys, because we're just hoping to spread the change. And I promise you, no matter how you may view us, that change is a positive change for your disabled child if you are a parent of a disabled child.
It's going to be a direct change, because when you start changing yourself, then you start changing the perception that society has. And it's like, I have spoken to so many disabled adults who are about my age, and so many of them have said to me, like, I was raised to be the quiet, nice little disabled kid.
Yeah, don't cause a problem.
Yeah, or like, you know? Or don't take up space. I will catch myself as Cyrus's parent doing certain things that could perpetuate that within him. So here's like, here's an example, okay? If we are out at a store and somebody's kind of like trying to get, you know, to where, like a section that we're looking at, and Cyrus is in his wheelchair, and then I'll kind of like move him out of the way and I'll be like, oh, I'm so sorry. And I've realized that I start, like, I do that, and I'm like, what the fuck am I sorry for? That he's here in his wheelchair, and like, we're just living life? Like, I don't have to be sorry. And like, just a tiny little thing like that could, like, literally plant a seed in his head to be like, I take up space.
Oh, man, you just made me think of something, too, that I just did the same thing.
Right? Yes. And this is what we're saying. It's like, I don't want my kid to be apologetic because he's existing. For just being him.
Yeah.
You know, like, I've been working on not apologizing, and instead, like, say we take whatever we need off of the shelf or whatever, and they're just saying, like, oh, thank you for being patient. You know, and, like, instead of apologizing, like, I'm like, what the fuck am I apologizing for? What does Cyrus have to apologize for? Like, we're just existing here as a family trying to, like, do our grocery shopping. Like, you can fucking wait. You know? And that's why I'm saying is, like, these little tiny things that we do. And I think that parents can do that even if they don't have disabled kids, right? Like, I think that, like, you're sitting there with your toddler and you're like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. But when you do...
I just think it has stronger implications. Yeah,
exactly. And so when you do have a disabled kid and you do use that type of language and all that, like, I think that, like you said, it's got stronger implications where it's like, am I taking up space in this world? And then if they feel like they are in the space that they're taking up is a burden, they're not going to want to take up more space.
Yeah. No, it's so true. I even think about there's plenty of times I can vividly picture in my head where, like, let's say somebody was trying to show something to Lino or give a gift to Lino, and he clearly outright disliked it. And, like, my immediate reaction is, like, no, it's okay. He'll like it. Yeah. Or, like, oh, it, you know, like, and again, I think this does equate totally with all kids, because, you know, there's certainly times where, like, Luca, let's say, receives a gift he may not like, and I'm just like, oh, well, you know, Luca, be happy you got something, sort of scenario, and they're equal, right? But that implication when it's a disabled child is that, yes, you could the key word could be perpetuating internalize ableism with the fact that, like, oh, well, I must be happy no matter what because I've gotten this. And there is a stronger implication. But it also is amazing when you do acknowledge it, because it does equally affect your children in a positive way. Right? Because equally, I also want Luca to be able to say, like, no, I don't fucking like this. I don't want your gift. And he should be able to say that. There is no reason he needs to be nice just because someone gave him something if he doesn't like it. Not that he should be mean, but he should be able to express his feelings about it, no matter what they are. So I think it's interesting that when you do the work and you self-reflect and you find these things that you try to correct, even with one child, disabled or not, it equally carries over to both of them. And I think that's, again, a beautiful thing, how it's that domino effect and how it starts to spread outward.
Yeah, I mean, and then there's equity, right? Like, there it is. Like, that's it. Like, like both my kids hate their gifts. Like, let's, you know? Like,
yeah. No, and they should be free to hate their gifts.
And I mean, I think about it a lot, like, right, there's kind of, like, the strong narrative right now around, like, allow your child bodily autonomy, right? If your kid doesn't want to hug, they can say, no, thank you, no hug. Like, they shouldn't have to be forced.
Oh, my God. Luca tells me no all the time.
Yeah. Alden, too. I'm like, can I have a kiss? He's like, no. And I'm like, no. All right. Well, then. Thank you. I know. Exactly. I'm like, but I just... love you. But there is a huge push for that right now, right? Minus the parents who have disabled kids. They are not part of that push. I'm not seeing it at all. I'm seeing there is like a very, very, very small portion of parents who are part of that, who are talking a lot about self-advocacy right now, who are talking a lot about cutting back on therapy and what therapy should be, and it shouldn't be about fixing disability. Like, there's that group, and they exist, but the majority, I am not seeing them be part of that narrative. They might be if they have some disabled kids in the mix, but with their disabled child, there is a lot of the narrative of, like, you do therapy, we're gonna try to fix this, you know, you have to do this because you have to do this, you know, we're dealing with it. With Cyrus and, you know, some family of being like, Cyrus has equipment. He doesn't need to be sitting in everybody's lap all the time. Like, let's give him his space. Because Cyrus can't just say no. And that's the struggle, is that, like, if somebody comes up to him and say, hey, can I have a kiss? Can I have a hug? Like, people don't even ask him that.
No,
You know? Like, they don't even ask that. Whereas with Alden, they do. And they'll be like, Alden, can I have a hug? And then they want Alden to go up to him, to them, and give them a hug, right? And so the question doesn't even get asked to Cyrus. And that is because it's assumed that Cyrus is just going to be okay with it, because Cyrus can't verbally say no.
Yeah. I mean, 100%, you're 100% right.
Yeah.
You're 100% right. I mean, I think I do it with Lito all the time.
No, and I, like, and that's the struggle.
Because I love him.
Yes, and that is the struggle, is that there's no malicious intent with, like,
no.
But it is the struggle because there's not the equality part of it where you 100%. Say, like, hey, you know, Alden, Luca, can I have a hug? Can I have a kiss? And then with, like, Lito and Cyrus are just like,
exactly. Like, there, I've literally just been like, awakened, because I ask Luca all the time, and that kid's like, no.
Yes.
And he will, like, straight up, I swear, if he could, he'd give me the finger.
Yes, Alden, just, too.
He doesn't have the fine motor skills just yet to do that.
In time.
Because I feel like he would just be like, flip me the bird and walk away.
Yeah.
And then there's so many times I just go in for Lino's cuddles, because he's just like the biggest cuddler. But I do now recognize that there are way less instances where I will actually be like, Lino, can I have a kiss? There's plenty of times I do.
Yeah, no, exactly. But
because Lino gives the best kisses. They're just the cutest thing. But he really does give the best kisses. It's like your whole cheek, and it's just the cutest thing ever. And he'll like, like a little... like a
barnacle.
Yeah, it's like the cutest thing, and I love it. It's literally my favorite thing ever. So I do ask that, but there's definitely times I find I don't, and you know, I think that's really telling.
We're not saying, you know, the post we made, a lot of the argument was kind of like, I think the point was missed completely, because it was very much like, well, my kid can't consent. If they could, it would be dangerous. And that's not what we're saying.
We're
literally just saying, like, talk to your kid and have other people talk to him. You know, like, that's kind of been my thing that I've been trying to work on, is like, if we have relatives over, and then they say, like, okay, Alden, can I have a hug and kiss? And then I'll say, well, ask Cyrus. Don't just go up to Cyrus. Yeah. Communicate. Talk to him. Say, hey, can I have a hug and a kiss from you, too? When you start doing this, when you start making these little changes, that's when you really see, like, the small effects of ableism and how society sees disability. Because if we do this in our home, or even outside of our home, we get met with that look of like, well, how's he gonna tell me? He can't just walk up to me and give me a kiss.
That's the point.
And that's the fucking point. You know what I mean? And it's like, well, he will tell you. You need to meet him where he's at. And people, because they are so resistant to learning about Cyrus and where he is at and his type of communication and all that, it's instantly dismissed. And it's instantly dismissed as like, well, he's not just going to walk up and give me a kiss. And it's like, Yeah. Okay, but communicate with him. Help him know what to expect, because I'm telling you right now, if somebody came up to me and just didn't even tell me anything and just got in my face, I'd be like, get the fuck away from me.
Having this discussion is making me think of specific circumstances that are, I'm almost like in real time having my own self-reflection. Mm-hmm. And it's bringing up really strong feelings and really strong judgments. And I think that's why I was just trying to formulate a thought on a pretty rough reality, like a realization about how I myself sometimes treat Lino and how I almost break that barrier of like autonomy with him, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really hard to reflect on that. And when it was happening like in real time in this recording, it was like I was having this thought and I was like, let me push this out. Let me talk about it. But I don't think I was even ready to verbalize and acknowledge what I was just realizing, mm-hmm. if that makes mm-hmm. sense. So I really did. I started sweating and I was like, I don't know if I could do it right now. Like I don't know. I wasn't mentally prepared to actually verbally talk about it. But I think it's a really great example of what all of this is for us, because they're really, again, I just think it's so funny that people have actually called us holier than thou.
Because Courtney is having some like massive self-reflection right now.
It really is. And it's just, it reminds me that so many people are so quick to defend themselves that it's just easier to villainize us. Mm-hmm. And it's so much easier to think of us as just judgmental, mm-hmm. and that we love to shame moms or whatever words you want to use. And, you know, that is just really not the case. Mm-hmm. And there are some really hard moments you and I go through personally and privately, emotionally, mentally, all these things. And I literally just had one in the middle of this recording. Because, yeah, I was just, I really did. My brain was just thinking about something that I thought would be a really great discussion along the lines of this topic, but I just don't think I'm actually ready for my own personal realization of it.
When you're ready. It doesn't have to. But yeah. All of this feeling that you're experiencing, I think if you were on the other side of it, you would have probably gone into the defensive, right?
Naturally.
Yeah, so I think that's why like, we don't necessarily fault parents for going on the defensive. I think that you and I have both done that many times. I know I have, especially early on.
I still do.
I still do sometimes. Yeah.
I still do.
I still struggle a lot with the advocacy side of things, right? Like, there's so many times, Courtney, like, I know our caretaker episode, you were doing somersaults in your brain, right? Of like flip flopping. And there's so many times that I do that myself, and I actually just had this discussion with my husband about it. We were discussing the comment section that just happened and the debate that was started from all of that. And I was like, you know, I can't fault parents, because there's almost that, like, what we just saw you go through, right? That, yeah. Like, that moment of, like, flip-flopping, that moment of, like, defensiveness. And I can't fault them. And I was like, I do that still, because it's like the advocacy side of things, or representation. That's a big thing for me, right? Because my private account, I've like taken a huge step back, like posting the kids, like showing representation of our family. And I struggle a lot with this, because I think representation is so important. I think transparency is so important. I think like completely romanticizing your life is not good. But I think having so much transparency to the point where you're not respecting your child's privacy is also not good. And so this
it's got to be a balance.
But this is where I struggle, because I don't really know where that balance is. Because I do think that there are a lot of accounts that do somewhat romanticize their lives without having the transparency of it. I think there are some big accounts that are too transparent. And so I've always wanted to grow my account, my private account, in a way that does show that representation of families, to say, like, hey, disability is not sad. Having a disabled kid, it's not sad. Like, we are living a great life. Like, there are struggles, but we work through it as a family, because that's what it's all about. But I don't feel like that's my space. And I was going back and forth with this with my husband, and I said, you know what? I think, I don't know that I have a good solution, but I think for me, the solution personally was taking a step back and letting disabled adults talk. Yeah. And I think that that is the safe space, right? I think it's the safe space for them to say, these are my struggles relating to my disability. These are my struggles growing up with my disability. These are my struggles with, you know, interabled relationships. And I think it's also good, fair enough for them to say, like, but also this is my life. I'm living life. Here's my problem. When I'm the type of parent that doesn't represent what our family looks like, and I leave it up to the adults, I do understand that leaves a whole group of disabled people out. Because you're not gonna necessarily hear from kids like mine. You're not gonna hear from, you know, the higher needs children, or that when they do become adults, you're not, like, there are situations where they're not going to be able to tell their stories. And so that's where, like, yeah, it's so tough. It's so messy. It gets so fucking messy.
It gets really messy. And it's also, you know, it's hard because when we talk about social media specifically, it's also an ever-changing mm-hmm. landscape, right? Like, this is still pretty new to society. You know, I think about my own childhood. I grew up my whole life without any of this, yeah. pretty much. I felt like, you know, it wasn't until I was really into adulthood that, like, MySpace and mm-hmm. all these other things started to even come out. So it's really still in its early stages, per se. So we're still navigating something that is ever changing. It's still, you know, we're all still finding our footing, mm-hmm. right? And I think that it's going to be really interesting, like, down the line when, like, studies come out about, like, the evolution of, like, just social media in general, not even just in the face of, like, disability and mm-hmm. advocacy. I think that's even, I mean, when you think about it from an advocacy level, this is across the board. Mm-hmm. This is political advocacy, disability, racism, all these things are just ever changing on social mm-hmm. media. So it is very messy. And I think it's really, you know, as a parent, I understand the perspective of a lot of these parents that dislike us or come at us.
Courtney, I think, you know, that you were, like, just coming at us yourself.
I totally just came at myself. I'm still sitting on that. Like, if I don't sound like I'm sweating, I'm still sweating.
She's glossy, because guys.
I did. I totally, like, I, you know, and that's the thing is, like, it's this whole journey as a parent and realizing where our place is in this story.
It's so tough.
Right? Because it is so mm-hmm. tough.
Because holy a shit. Lot of our lives are very parent-centered, because yeah. we are the ones making the decisions. We are the ones speaking and advocating on behalf of our child. Like,
yeah. yeah. And we're filled with internalized ableism, and we're filled with all these preconceptions and all these stigmas. Like, we're filled with mm-hmm. them, no matter which way you want to say. Like, you can't deny it. You know, to deny it would make you holier than thou, not us, because I have to tell you something, we're all living mm-hmm. with it. And I think that it's just so easy to villainize us, because we're just challenging it. We're just trying to open our eyes. We're just keeping an open mind, and we're taking it all in, and we sit with it.
Yeah,
we really do. And we have to remember that work that we are going to do, like, we keep going back to this, but that work that we're going to do as parents, it's going to trickle down.
Yeah.
And if you have a goal and you have a vision in mind of what you want your child's future to look like and be like, and how they're going to be in society, how they're going to interact with society, because many of us are in the situation where we know we will not be there always with our children. You need to spread that outward. whether or not your child can or cannot consent in the future, whether or not you're around, you need to then surround them with other people who share that vision of what your child deserves in society and who they are, and allow them to be themselves, no matter what that looks like. Mm-hmm. No matter what abilities they have or don't have, you need to surround them with people that share the vision of them being able to just be a human being.
Yeah.
And that starts with you. If you were a parent, that starts with you. I'm sorry, it's true. I'm throwing another thing on you as a quote unquote burden. But yes.
Well,
this is also part of your job.
I think that we can end this on, like, we're going to give parents homework right now, because we are so with our children. Our children are constantly having to meet goals, right? They go to therapy. What's their goal? Let's see if we can meet this goal. It follows them through their whole life of having to meet goals, and, like, I hate goals, but, you know, like, our kids are having to constantly meet goals. And so my and Courtney's homework for you guys is to set your own fucking goals, because as parents, we can have goals too. And maybe that looks like checking your ableism. Maybe that looks like listening to this podcast. Maybe that looks like following some more disabled influencer accounts online. You know, like, maybe that looks like going into a disability Reddit and reading people's real lived experiences. You know, like, this is gonna be our homework for you guys. Because our children should not be the only ones that are faced with goals and having to meet goals while we sit back and say, I don't want to listen to this, because that's just mom shaming, you know?
Yeah, everything Brittany just said.
I know that this was a spicy episode, guys, but we really hope that it resonated with some people. I think that's always our goal during the episode, right? We have goals too, guys. But I think that our goal is always that it resonates to some extent. Even if you're pissed off when you're listening to us, hopefully you come back and think about it and say, you know.
Maybe.
But we really appreciate it if you guys have been sticking around this whole time listening to us bitch about internalized ableism with parenting.
Yay.
Oh, gosh. All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening to the Bitching and Bolusing podcast. And until next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the Bitching and Bolusing podcast, where we unpacked our unfiltered opinions and ideas. Be sure to connect with us on social media at Bitching and Bolusing for more unapologetic dissent against the mainstream parenting narrative. And for an extra gritty perspective and ad-free listening, become a Patreon subscriber. You can visit us at www.bitchingandbolusing.com for previous episodes, merch, and more.
Hey, incredible parents, I have a special message about the Recess Project. Imagine every child having the chance to play freely. The Recess Project is on a mission to transform school playgrounds into inclusive spaces for kids with disabilities. They work with schools and communities, fundraising to make school playgrounds more accessible. They're making a real impact, and you can be a part of it. Head to their website, therecessproject.org, to donate, and let's make recess accessible for all children. We're not just talking about it. We're actively supporting a cause that matters. So join us in backing the Recess Project and creating inclusive playgrounds, because every child deserves a playground where they can just be kids.